buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, you're stuck with me. If you'd like to talk cars, then give us a call, 602-508-0960. If you have a dispute between husband and wife about car-related stuff, I'm a good Judge Judy, Judge Jerry, or whatever. And if you have a couple of cars that you want to talk about their reliability, I can do that as well. If you have a hot rod and you're thinking about doing something to it, then I can kind of warn you about that. So we have lots to offer, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. Toll free, 888-960-9696, and that includes everybody within the borders of the United States if you listen to iHeartRadio and some other venues for radio talk shows. There is a list I created in 1988 called the Best Car Repair Shops. I was the first one to come out with these referral networks. Rosie Romero was the second. So when it comes to car repair shops, that's the number one question I get is, I live in this part of town, who do you send me to? Well, Larry Harker's Auto is up at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's been around a very long time. Bob and Ellen are really good people. They know right from wrong. They have Jeremy, who's a world-class master technician. He has more certifications than everybody I know together. So it's a good shop, but they're really good at diagnosis. So if you honk the horn and the rear windshield wiper flaps, then they can fix it for you. But they do oil changes and everything north of that. So, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School is a good place to start. When it comes to using a repair shop, well, let me preface this by saying that I am court certified with respect to standards involving our repair industry and normal standards and standards of care and all that kind of stuff with respect to normal industry procedures and stuff like that. If you do business with somebody who uses a generic work order off the internet, and the work order on the top says, for estimate only, and they use it as a repair order that should have the full customer's name, phone number, all the information from the customer, and all the information from the vehicle, as well as what the customer says, and then, of course, you're going to add to that what you did, and then it's going to have all the parts and labors listed independently of one another. So if somebody is using that form for you and they list all the parts and pricing, but then on the left-hand margin they list the labor, and the labor for all these different components, the parts, they're not tied together. So you really don't know, and then you don't have a name for the part. It just has one and it gives you a part number and then it has a price. These are red warning flags that you have to recognize. Then all the hourly charges on the labor are on the half an hour. So everything is 1.5, 3, 4.5, 5, 2.5, 3.5. It's everything is in the half hour increment, which is just completely out of the realm of responsibility or the proper procedures for my industry of car repair. You can make up your own labor prices. You can certainly say this costs you $300 without putting an hourly rate on there. You can do that stuff. But when it comes to just boilerplating all this stuff, there is nobody that can use that format to say that this is what it costs, because it's just not that way. When we look up your labor, it's going to be very specific. 1.1 hours unless it has this V8. To change the water pump, let's pretend. If it has this V8, then it's 1.1 hours plus 3/10 of an hour for a total of 1.4. So that's how it works. When we look it up, we have to look up all the specifics of the car. And that is for a normal technician, a normally skilled technician, to perform the take the water pump off, put the new one on, pressurize it, add coolant, blah, 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 go test drive it. It doesn't include the diagnosis, which almost everybody uses as a separate fee. So in the case of you bring it in, you got a coolant leak, the technician's going to pop the hood. He's going to look for something obvious. He's going to take the radiator cap off. He's going to install a hand pump in the place of the radiator cap. He's going to look at the top of the cap, and it says 12-pound cap. So he's going to start pumping up his air, just like a bicycle pump, and he's going to watch the gauge. And he's probably going to go one past the 12. So he's going to go 13. And he has to stop at 13, 12 or 13. At that point, he's recreated the way that this car drives down the road. So now he starts looking for water leaks. He may lift it up in the air, but one way or another, he's going to find the water leak. Now, the water leak may not be in the engine or on the outside of the engine, but we got water coming out of the tailpipe. So that's something that we are going to have to look at. We could have water dripping off of the passenger side dash down to the floor on the passenger side of the car. That's a heater core. We could have water dripping underneath the feet of the passenger. And again, that's the drain in the evaporator case, which would say that it's a heater core. So these are all the things that have to happen. And you have to insist that the bill you get is a clear reflection of what happened. Because when you have a dispute, you want to make sure that you know what they did. So they can't just say, find and fix cooling system, $312.95. That's just not going to work. That's the recipe for disaster. So when you do business like that, and this all comes to the table because I just reviewed a case that had this thing. And the standard of care and our industry standards has been violated by the shop. So I say to the attorneys, I don't want to be on your side. You're representing the shop. I don't want to be there. I can't, because everything he's, and supposedly has 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years of experience and blah, blah, blah. This guy's never been a businessman in his life. He's never run a shop in his life. He's probably never been responsible for writing a work order, which service writers typically do that. So those are the things you need to watch out for. This is a calamity that's going to end up in court, and from my point of view, the shop's going to take a beating. Let's go to the phones. Who might that be, Gil?
We have Hal.
Hal, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. I've got a 2004 Taurus, and yesterday when I was about 10 miles from home, I started the car up and started to go, and I couldn't get it to accelerate much faster than the RPM for idle RPM. So I turned on my flashers, got into a parking place, and I had to have the car towed home. When I got home, I started it up, and it sounded like that never happened. It started to run normal again. Would you have any idea of what I should do from this point? I'm a fix-it-yourself guy if I know what I'm doing, with some advice.
Okay. I think I can help you. Let me think out loud. He had it and it ran, but it wouldn't go very fast. But clearly the ignition system, the spark plugs, the coil, the camshaft sensor, the crankshaft sensor that take the place of points and condenser, by the way, all of that's working because he's got spark. Now, we need three things to make the car run down the road: spark, compression, and fuel. The fact that it was running, let me ask you a question. When it was running, did it idle smoothly?
Yes.
Okay. That tells me we don't have any broken valves, cylinder heads defect. We're not missing on one cylinder. If it idles smoothly, whether it's in drive or in neutral or park, bingo. We don't have a compression problem. So we got fuel running down, or we've got spark running down the road. We've got compression. That's fine. So now all of a sudden we got this fuel system. Now, the fuel system symptoms of substandard fuel pressure are exactly what you just described. Now, I'm not suggesting that you take the guy on the radio's word for it. You're having intermittent problems, so you've already got a problem anyway. But what typically people do is they go rent a fuel pressure gauge. They tape it to the outside of the windshield. They know that when they're driving around, the fuel pressure is going to be between 30 and 60 pounds, depending on the car and the motor and blah, blah, blah. So all of a sudden, they find that, oh, it won't run above idle. It'll hardly lip down the road, and you look up, and it's got 28 pounds of pressure or 15 pounds of pressure. So you go, okay, I have substandard pressure. Now, you said it's a 2000 Taurus, so it's 20 years old. Has it ever had a fuel pump that lives in the tank?
I bought the car about 4 months ago, and when I did, I was smelling fuel all over the place. So I took it in, and I paid $700 to have a new fuel pump put in.
2 minutes.
I kind of ruled that out, although it doesn't necessarily mean it's not the fuel pump.
Yeah. So I'm going to guess here that they said that they found the fuel leak at the top of the tank, and they had to replace the O-ring or the gasket, and they had to remove the fuel pump to do that. So as a result of that, let's go ahead and replace the fuel pump. How close am I?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right. I think this is theirs to figure out. I think in a nice way you say, Mark, I didn't have this problem before you did the fuel pump, and it seems like I'm running out of gas because I don't get to go past 11 miles an hour. So if I go to 12, it falls on its face, and I'm unclear as to where we go from here. But could you please check the fuel pump and maybe
1 minute
hang a pressure gauge on it and have one of your technicians drive it for lunch or something like that? But I'm pretty sure. But there's two other things in your fuel system. We have a fuel pressure regulator, and that's important with respect to the fuel. And then we have fuel level. Now, where's the gauge right now?
What do you mean? Where's the
fuel gauge right now? How much fuel has it got in it?
Oh, I filled it up.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
The fuel pump is lubricated and cooled by the fuel in the tank. And we have lots of youngsters that run off the bottom quarter of the tank. So sometimes the fuel pump is not being lubricated and cooled because there's not enough fuel in the gas tank to pull that off. So as a result, we do a little more than normal fuel pump replacements for the kids at ASU. So I think you have a fuel supply problem. I don't know if it's the fuel pump, if it's the check valve in the fuel pump, or if it's the fuel pressure regulator. And you've got an intermittent problem, which is really going to be tough unless it just finally gives up the ghost. And that's what you better say. When you say your prayers tonight, just say, it just goes into its bad mode and stays there. Okay?
Mark, I do have a pressure gauge that I could hang on the window. And if I don't go too far from home, I might try that myself.
Okay, now your fuel pressure gauge is a specific kind of gauge with a fitting on the end of it, and it has to be able to handle 40, 50, 60, 70 pounds of pressure. If it's a fuel pressure gauge from the old carbureted days, that's a fuel pressure gauge that has the top end of 10 PSI, and it also is real easy to attach to the fuel pump or at the mechanical fuel pump. So make sure you get the right gauge, and I think you can rent the appropriate fuel injection gauge from one of the auto parts stores around town. But anyway, I got to run, Hal. Good luck to you. First of all, do you have a shop that you go to that you trust?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I think you go – are they the ones that did the fuel pump recently?
No.
Okay. I think I'd go back to the fuel pump recently shop, and I would try to get satisfaction or at least have them diagnose what's wrong. They have an obligation to diagnose this. Okay? Don't get in an argument about technical. Mr. Salem, this is not a problem I had before you did the work on my fuel system. It's just not a problem I had. So I would like very much for you to take a look at it, drive the car, and see if you can help me determine. Because if it's not your problem, both of us will know that. But you can't say it's not your problem until we find out what it is. And like I said before, you gave me this. It appears that you gave me this problem. Hal, good luck to you. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. So it's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here on KKNT 960 AM, talking about cars and car repair problems. The list of best car repair shops I know all the owners. Tom at Action Auto Repair I-17 in Deer Valley, I've known him since 1983. He's a good guy. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. He knows right from wrong. He uses good auto parts, and he's well-versed in virtually all cars on the road. So if you live near I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair would be a good shop if you don't already have a great shop yourself. Good morning, Bob. Oh, Bob, stand by. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 if you'd like to ask a car question. But Bob's first. Bob, good morning.
Morning, Mark. I had a bad tire a couple weeks ago on my 07 Malibu. So I just had to buy one tire. It was one of the national tire chains. And I was kind of in a hurry. I didn't check the date. And then a couple days later, I looked at the date. And it was made in August of 17. That's pretty old, isn't it, to be selling?
No, it's a 10-year-old is the bracket we have. Let me just tell you what I tell everybody. There's no such thing as a poppin' fresh tire. So we're not going to get it out of the mold, cool it off, put it on a truck, and Salem's going to install it anywhere close to the date the tire was made. So we're installing tires that are 6 months and a year old, because of the time to process where it goes into a warehouse and it's a size that Salem's going to call for and Salem needs and delivered. Yours is a little out of whack. The shop has no obligation to bring you to what we call a poppin' fresh tire because we can't. But is it a shop you've dealt with before?
Yeah, but it's an 07. The tires are all mismatched. Maybe I kind of set... I said, I just want an inexpensive tire because this is just like a back-and-forth-to-work car.
Okay.
So maybe so I asked for a low-priced tire, but okay. I think it was cheaper than any. So maybe I sort of set myself up.
Well, not necessarily, but let me ask you, you said all the other date codes on all the other three tires are different.
Well, yeah, because I inherited this car, and then two of the tires had been replaced already. And then this was actually the one that blew was the last original. The date on that was 06 on the tire that blew. It's 07, so you know.
Yeah, Bob, obviously this car's not going to put a lot of miles on a year. So right now at 17, you're good to 2027. So you need to look at what your annual driving is and how many miles you're going to go and when you're going to replace it. Because most people replace their tires somewhere around 50,000 miles, 40 to 50,000 miles. I think this, you're going to wear out this tire long before it ages out in 2027. No, 2030. No, we go from the 17. So I was right. It's 2027. I wouldn't really be worried about it. Let me put you in as much of a comfort zone as I can. If you wanted to take all my grandkids to Colorado and bring them back home in that car, I'd want to know what the date code's on the other ones. And if they were 8 years old, I really wouldn't care either. But I would let them go with a tire that's 3 years old. I don't think you have anything to worry about. And that's happened to me before. And if there's no other way, we'll call the warehouse and say, get us the newest tire you got, and we'll remount it. But frankly, that only happens once a year. And a lot of times it's a new customer, and because I think the older ones probably respect our decision a little easier. But the shop that put it on is really the shop you need to deal with. Okay?
Thanks, Mark.
All righty, good enough. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Another shop in the valley that I can tell you unequivocally does a good job is Auto Dynamics. They're in Sun City. It's the only shop in Sun City that I can refer you to because I know they do a good job, and I know Derek and Chuck. Derek's the young man that runs it. Chuck is his father, and I've known Chuck since 1968. Many of the shops around town are in their second generation, as mine is, and as Chuck's is, and a whole bunch of other guys out there are the sons, Dave Martin, from his family. They are all second generation. I'm first, but they're second. So it's not uncommon for that to happen. But if you're in Sun City and you're looking for a good shop, may I suggest Automotive Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. So Grand and 99th Avenue, and it's the northwest corner of that facility. When it comes to picking a shop, it's not a bad idea to go on the internet and write down the name of the shop, Salem Boys Auto Reviews. And look at some of their reviews. All of us have bad reviews. Heck, go look at mine. Some guy's mad at me about a couple of Corvettes. And somebody was mad because I wouldn't extend their warranty. So it happens. But you want somebody that's north of 3 stars. So that's typically, but if he has only 1 star and it's a 5-star rating and it goes on and on and on about how great they are, take that into consideration. It's also with warranty issues, and I'm not saying this in defense of me. I'm saying it in defense of the industry. It's just as unacceptable to us that you ask to extend an agreed warranty when you ask us to extend it. So we don't want to shorten it. You don't want us to shorten it, and we don't want you to lengthen it. So we both can't have our way. So you can't come in and I'm going to say, well, I gave you a 5-year warranty, but you know, you're 4 years and 8 months. Uh-uh. I can't do that. I shouldn't do that. Likewise, you can't use the other end of that that said you gave me a 5-year warranty and it's 5 year and 3 months and I want you to do the job over again with a 5-year warranty. So those are tricky things and those are tough things that you're going to find out what your shop's like during those. Frankly, I think most of the guys in town, if you've been a customer of theirs for a very long period of time, as opposed to somebody that walked in, this is their first repair bill ever, and they live clear across town, or whatever, there's some extenuating circumstances, I've said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll pay for the parts, you pay for the labor, because you're out of warranty. Is that something we can agree to? Or something like that. You pay a $200 deductible on a $400 bill, so basically you pay half, I'll pay half. So those are the kinds of things that we run across, but it's not unusual for the customer to believe that the warranty number is a one that slides, and rarely does it slide against them. It's for them. But again, I want to tell you, based on our volume, this is something that we deal with once a year. So it's not something that we deal with a lot. Our industry deals with a lot. It's just something that will really ruin the relationship between you and your shop. So just make sure the warranty is oftentimes not on the ticket, but many of us have a blanket warranty. Some shops have a 1 year, 12,000 mile on everything, everything, everything. Some shops have, they divide it up into hard parts or labor. So if it's particular labor operation, they may go ahead, and if it's $100, $125, $150 labor operation, that may be something that they're flexible on. But if it's a total air conditioning replacement that costs $3,000 and they give you a 3-year warranty, then that's something they're going to probably sit down hard on. It's not that we want to take advantage of you. We have to draw the line someplace, and warranties is something that everybody has to deal with. Your cars, your refrigerator, your house, your air conditioning units, your water heater. Everything has a warranty, and they're basically saying we'll take care of it up to this point. So that's how it works. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and there's 5 of them, so you're welcome to grab one. 602-508-0960. And if you're embarrassed to give the question, then have your wife call us up and have her ask us the question. But we enjoy ladies as well, because that's a different perspective. So if a lady has a question, we're the people. Well, 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here till 11 or till noon, talking about car repair problems and all that kind of junk. Eric, you're up next. You were first. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I tried to get my wife to take the call instead of me, but she wouldn't go for it, but so you stuck with me. But I've got a Toyota Camry 2014, and for a while I've noticed, you know, driving down the road, I'm 35, 40 miles an hour, something around there. I get a bit of a shudder that almost felt like wheels out of balance or out of round or something. But I got a new set of tires, and I still get the same thing. And I'm thinking it might be something related with my transmission, because I noticed that it seems to happen when the transmission shifts, and then it's kind of a bit lower RPM, and so it's like almost got a little bit more load on the engine or something. Okay. And it doesn't do it if I switch into manual shifting and shift at like 3,000 RPM.
Okay, how many miles are on the Camry?
93,000.
Okay. Okay. I'm assuming this shutter, or whatever you called it, has nothing to do with the steering wheel or the brake application. So I'm going to move on from there.
No.
I think you should pull it down into the lowest gear and manually shift it all the way, but on the top end, does it show as the 5-speed in automatic? Is that what it shows on the shifter?
Yeah.
Okay. Stay away from 5. And another thing you can do is that's going to kick you out of overdrive. So we're going to lock up the converter. We have overdrive and a converter lockup. And when the converter doesn't lock up, then it shutters. And like you said, it's a low RPM issue. So if you can get it to shutter, I want you to keep your foot on the gas. Try to maintain the same speed. And I want you to gently apply the brake with your left foot. If the shutter goes away, and every time you let go, everything's fine for X amount of time, then it starts shuttering, and you barely touch the brake pedal, and it quits shuttering, you've done it. It's a bad converter, or it's a bad connection to the converter, or it's a bad signal to the converter. But if we pull the pan and we find out it's full of metal, it's a transmission. And that's how it goes. It's a little early for 93,000, unless, of course, your wife's been driving it all this time and drag racing everybody off traffic lights.
She's got a heavy foot, but I'm not sure about drag racing.
Okay. Well, that's, I think you've done a good job, because I'm going to go in the transmission arena, because you have an engine miss would be different symptoms, and a tire, a bad wheel bearing, a bad tire, a bad anything that spins, drive shaft, front axles on your Camry. You don't have that. You've described it virtually perfectly that it's going to be a transmission related, and if you're able to stop the shutter by just gently applying the brake, but not enough to slow the car down, then you and I have hit a home run. Now, do you have a shop that you deal with?
I don't.
Okay, what part of town are you in?
I'm in Gilbert. I'm in East Valley.
Okay. There's nobody south of the 60 that I can recommend. Please understand. There's lots of good shops, but they haven't applied to be on my list. And if they did apply, there was something that didn't do it. So I'm the only shop south, and I'm at Warner and I-10. And if you want to stop by and have somebody take a ride, if you can duplicate the problem and take somebody for a ride, as long as you don't keep our staff for like an hour, then the ride is free. Just take you for a ride, and you talk to Andy or Alan.
Okay.
All righty.
And then you said to test that when I'm manually shifting, right, to see if I can get the shutter to happen and then touch the brake.
Good point. And I'm wrong. There's two different things I want you to do. I want you to manually shift it and feather the throttle and try to get it into the environment that causes the shutter. Okay. Then number two, leave it in drive, and when you drive it, then the shutter happens, and then you apply your brake. We're going to do two different tests. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
You bet. Hector, you're up next.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
I have an 01 Sentra. I have to change the lower control arms on it. Don't have a torque wrench, so I was wondering how important is it to torque it, or can I just tighten them to feel?
Okay.
Just a off-the-wall question.
Oh, that's okay. It's okay. Did you take them off already?
No. Okay. I haven't done that yet.
All right. And how come you're replacing them real quick?
Well, the ball joints on the front are pretty. They're worn down. They're completely exploded. So I have to. It's the whole control arm,
right,
is one unit to go ahead and change the whole piece.
And you got tire wear that goes along with those bad ball joints.
Well, I've got brand new tires about 3 months ago, so I just don't want them to go bad.
Okay. A torque wrench is good. You can rent it from the local auto parts store. And yes, the torque wrench is good, but if you want to just spin the, and you know what, I'm experienced enough, I would just pay attention to the bolts that I took off, and then I would decide on how hard I'm going to put them. You put them back on till there's tension, and then you just kind of muscle them down. I don't think you're going to be able to break those bolts off, especially if you're using like a 12-inch ratchet handle. But if you put a 3 or 4-inch piece of pipe on it, then I think you can bend everything up pretty good.
I've been listening to your show long enough not to try to do something stupid. So,
yeah.
Okay.
I throw that in not because I think you're going to do that. I'm throwing it in for everybody else who has an 18-year-old kid that decides to torque it with a 3-foot piece of pipe over the ratchet. That's just something we did when we were younger.
I'll be honest with you. I'm 40 and I'm still learning by my mistakes. So I get what you're saying.
Hey, you know, there's a lot of us that are in. I'm north of you 20 years, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm learning from my mistakes. I went out the other day and thought I was just going to lift the lip on one of my horses to just check and I must have caught her by surprise because she swung her head around and hit me in the face. It was my fault. Oh. And she made me so much uglier than I am now, according to my wife, Renee. But the idea really is I should have walked up, and the proper thing is walk up, put your hand on her back, rub her ears, let her know you're there, let her smell you to know that you're the one that feeds her, and then you just, you know, put your arm underneath and you open up the lip and you look at the tooth. I didn't do that. So yeah, you live and learn. You live and learn. So anyway, I'm going to run on. Hector, Nick, you're next. And then I also have a question about tire pressure, and I'll cover that right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here till noon. So if you want to join us, now's the time. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Because this is KKNT 960. Like I promised, Nick, you're up. How can I help you?
Mark, I've got a 06 Chevy Colorado with like 750,000 miles on it. I just had the rack and pinion replaced, and a few weeks later, the high-pressure hose started leaking at the connect, not at the connector to the rack, but where it goes from the rubber hose with the metal clamp on it.
Uh-huh.
I had somebody put a new one in. They couldn't find one 3 to 5 days to get it, so they had a hose manufacturer place make one.
Yeah.
Picked it up. It worked for about an hour, and all of a sudden I look in the rearview mirror, and I got, like, a cloud of smoke coming out the back, so it blew a hole in the hose.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was that funny. I was on my way to Tucson.
I'm thinking, well, let me explain. Power steering on the exhaust creates a white smoke that James Bond would be happy with.
Yeah, he was really going to be happy with this one until I pulled over. Question, how much pressure is built up through the from the power steering pump through the rack and pinion and that? Is it quite a bit of pressure?
Oh, yeah, that's why we have crimp fittings on those hoses, and those hoses are reinforced, and the hole in the middle is like a dime, and I'm exaggerating for visual reasons. The hole in the middle is like a dime, and the outer portion of the hose is like 50-cent piece. So the answer is yeah.
Now, because what happened was is he got another one, he started putting it on, and he never called to tell me that. Now the rack is leaking at another fitting somewhere, and so he had to, you know, get like O-rings or whatever. I was just curious, could it have caused damage to the rack because it built up so much pressure and then it blew, or
if you
just
drove
to get a little bit of advice?
Yeah, if the rack lets go and you realize you don't have power steering and you're on your way to Tucson and the next exit is 6 miles, then yeah. You could have caused damage to the pump. And when the pump starts coming apart, it sends metal through the rack. And so, yes, you could have. But right now, what needs to be done is we need to fix all the leaks. Then we take the return hose from the pump, and we just aim it at a 5-gallon bucket. We put a funnel into the reservoir, and then we start it up. Takes two guys, and we let it idle. And the guy inside turns the steering wheel to the right, till it stops, and then he slowly turns it to the left while the other guy, that's three guys we need, the other guy's pouring fluid in it to keep it, and then the other guy's holding the return line at the bucket. So we're going to flush the power steering system when we do this. It doesn't take more than 20 seconds to a minute and a half. So that's what needs to be done, but you'll know whether that pump took a beating, and the pump is what takes a beating. The rack doesn't. So the pump
like 750,000.
Yeah, chances of...
Before I pulled over.
How much was leaked out of the bottom when you pulled over? What kind of a puddle did you have?
Not too bad. I mean, it had drops over a 1 foot area, but the other hose that was leaking,
mm-hmm.
just by idling, it would have almost a 6-inch parameter of like fluid.
Mm-hmm.
This one probably had half of that.
Okay. One's a return.
After it's been fitting from different locations.
Yeah, one's a return, one's the pressure, and the fact that it's still leaking means the pump had fluid in it. So this is theirs to fix, and hopefully they'll do a good job. We're hearing that there's lots of parts that aren't available. But your power steering hose is made by a whole lot of different companies, and once you have a part number, you can cross it over to a variety of places. I know that I'm hearing a lot of that, but here's my answer. I'm not experiencing a lot of that. Now, we have a parts department that I am so blessed with. Sean and Jeff are just wizards. They found a water pump for a Packard the other day. They found a fuel tank for I don't even remember what it was. It's a car that they made seven of. So I just don't know who their parts department is or who they're leaning on. But ask them to try again to see if they can find a factory hose for that. Okay?
Well, they called a bunch of places, and nobody had one. And then a place that I drive for, they're going to have one in a week. You know, that's on a purchase order coming from, like, Corman, I think.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Mark. Right. I appreciate it.
You betcha, Nick. Okay, we had a caller call in about tire pressure. And so I'm going to talk about tire pressure right now. There are two tire pressures for your cars and your trucks. Two tire pressures. One of them's written on the door, and one of them's written on the tire. And they're never going to be the same. Okay? Now, first of all, let's create this vision for you in your head. When you're driving down the road and you hit a big pothole, you can imagine that the tire collapses. Okay? And what happens is if you collapse the tire too much, then the tire hits the wheel and it cuts the sidewall of the tire. The tire instantly deflates and you just ruined the tire. So you can imagine that that happens. I can tell you for sure it happens. Now, let's talk about a tire, and just for extremes, like, give me a chance here. We're talking about a 40-pound tire that's at 20 pounds. When it hits a chuck hole, it doesn't have sufficient air in it. And if we would have had 40 pounds in it, it would have bounced out and it wouldn't have collapsed the tire and wouldn't have cut the tire on the wheel. So if we carry more air pressure in it, it protects us from the pothole damage that could be created. If we have more air in the tire, you get better fuel economy. Remember when you rode your bicycle? And if your tires were half flat and you were on your way to the gas station, it took quite a bit of effort. But when you got there, you ended up the tires. And on the way home, it's like driving a brand new bicycle. So better fuel economy with the higher inflation. And the tire, everybody's going to go, well, the ride. No, the ride doesn't suffer. With today's cars in the last 20 years, you're not going to notice a doggone difference in ride. Maybe 1% of you are, but nobody else is. So we're talking about ride, fuel economy, and tire safety. That's what we're talking about. Okay, the thing on your door says that if you got four big football players in this car and you've got it weighed at the maximum it's rated for, you only need 36 pounds in the tire. That's what the sticker says. Now, the gross vehicle weight of the car is 4,000 pounds. Without anybody in it, the empty weight is 3,500 pounds. Let's pretend. So it's 3,500 pounds. So a gross vehicle weight is higher, and the empty weight is lower. So the gross vehicle weight, which is the weight of the car plus all the occupants it can hold, plus some beer in the trunk, that's gross vehicle weight. Now, what does Mark Salem do? I go by the tire, or what it says on the tire. I want the tire fully inflated. I want my wife and my daughter and my son and myself to bounce off curbs and bounce through potholes. I want the fuel economy. I want all that. So I know that this tire is capable of cold pressure of 40 pounds. So it's kind of like a bicycle tire. I want to use 40. Every car we own in our rental fleet, in our car, my kids, my wife, all the stuff I own, I just look at the side of the tire and it says maximum load at something PSI. And it's going to be right near the rim. So whatever it says, I don't care about the maximum load. I just want to know what the maximum pressure is cold. So some of my tires show 35, and the maximum pressure is 50. Boom, I'm going to 50. So that's how tire pressure is. If you want to be cautious and be perfectly right, then you're going to go by what the sticker on the door says. So if it says 32 pounds of pressure in these two tires, then 32 cold it is. So you can do whatever you want. I like the better fuel economy. I like bouncing in and out of potholes. Some people are going to go, well, you're going to wear the center of the tire out. No, we aren't. When the tire's overinflated, then instead of having a flat tread, it has a bowed, so it's rounded. It's half of a circle. So we wear the center of the tire out. I haven't seen that in 10 years. And I've never seen it on any of the vehicles that I'm responsible for maintaining, which is all of our family vehicles and all of our company vehicles. So That's how it is. That you ask my opinion, and that's what you get. Who's on the phone?
That would be Dan.
Dan, good morning.
Yeah, Mark, I got a question on tires, the longevity.
Okay.
Well, anyway, I just bought tires the other day, and I got they were made 08-20, so that was pretty good. I don't know if it's the 8th week or the 8th month.
Okay, 8th week.
So that was like a... Is the 08 mean 8th week?
Yes.
Okay, that's good, because I just got four new ones, because that other one's... But anyway, I was thinking about tires on trailers, horse trailers, boat trailers, fifth wheels. Every 10 years, get new ones?
Well, RVs, they say, are a little different, because they sit in the sun a lot, and they're not driven. So you can get numbers between 5 and 6 years. But yes, that's the answer to your question. We're supposed to change RV tires a little earlier than a passenger car or a light truck. And I'm not going to get into semis and all that big stuff. So in an RV and situation, but I got to tell you, Mark's fudged on that every once in a while. I'm not telling you to fudge on it, but you know, I've got a tire that's 7 years old and it's been stored inside, so I don't have the ultraviolet problems, and you know, it's a controlled environment, so I don't have all the heat, and so all I'm going is to California to, so my wife can fill the motorhome full of fancy wine and come back home, and I might, you know, I'm probably just going to go ahead. But
so after the 10th year, you're going to get new ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not going past 10. And I want to tell you something. This is how strongly I feel about this. We literally have a stamp that stamps red on your work order. And it says your tires, here's the dates that you have. And then it says 10 years after this date, we're not going to touch your tire. We're not going to touch it. We're not going to rotate it. We're not going to inflate it. We're not going to patch it. We are not going to touch a 10-year-old tire. And here's why. Everybody in the world is suing the shop for that. So some lady's driving down the road, and she's been told by two shops that she's got a 10-year-old tire. So she doesn't pay attention. She goes to California. On her way back, the tire blows up, and two children in the back seat plus mama in the passenger seat die. So now everybody's getting sued. Everybody who touched that tire, everybody who inflated that tire, everybody who rotated that tire, everybody's getting sued. But during this period of time, they tell us about some places that it was at. We went out and found the work orders, and they had been warned by two of the facilities that they had a 10-year-old tire on their car. So now what does the jury do? So that's how important it is for Mark and many other shops to tell people, we're not going to play that game. I don't want to be in the food chain on a car that blew a 10-year-old tire. I have a case right now where the person pulled into a tire shop and they asked for help. This young man came out and helped them inflate their tires. Then they're on a trip, the tire blows up. They're suing the shop. The shop should have known it was a 10-year-old tire. Well, number one, the date code of the tire can be on the outside, which is easy to say, or it could be on the inside. And I'm not going to tell my guys they got to crawl underneath the car to get the date code, although it's up in the air and they can spin the tires and get it. So this young man, who's trained to do nothing more than air up tires, he did that. He's not trained to look at the tread. He's not trained to look at the sidewall for cracking. He's not trained to look for eggs and tread separations. None of that. He is simply trained to help people air up their tires. So because of that relationship that lasted 4.5-5 minutes, that shop is in the food chain. So my answer is we are at the extreme. There are shops out there that won't let you leave with a 10-year-old tire because it's cheaper to put on a tire than it is to defend yourself in a lawsuit.
1 minute.
Is that a sick set of circumstances? So I'm not going to tell you who the shops are for obvious reasons, but there's some shops. I would say that there's within 100 shops in Phoenix that won't let you leave for the 10-year-old tire unless they know you're trying to scam them, and then that's how it works. So, Dan, I hope I answered your question. If I didn't, hang on, and Gil will come back and talk to you. When you talk about good car repairs, Kurtz Auto is a good place. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Domestic, import, gas, and diesel. Kurt's a good guy. And the people surrounding him, like Eric, they are very professional. They know what they're doing. They're ASE Master Certified Technicians, and Kurt's been around a long time, since 1987. So if you're looking for a good shop in that central corridor, the I-17 corridor, and you're near I-17 and Bell Road, on the northeast corner is Kurtz Automotive, spelled with a C. He's a good guy. I promise you'll like him and him and his staff. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back to the second hour of Under the Hood with Mark Salem, and we're here to take your calls, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You have a 1 in 5 chance. Let's talk about some stuff that you probably never heard of before. If you go into a shop and you've never been there before, and you talk to them about a particular issue, and they, let's pretend that they bid it at $850 on the short side. And then you go have another shop diagnose it, and their diagnosis is the same. But their whole ticket is really $600. And so you wonder about that. It happens a lot, but one of the reasons it happens for, and this is, please understand that I'm surrounded by shop owners. And we get together once in a while, and we just laugh. We talk about stupid stuff and funny customers and employees that do stuff that are crazy. But anyway, one of them said this, and it's really something that all of us do. The customer that comes in that gets the $850 bill is one you don't want. And they start the story off with, I used to do business with Mark Salem, and he ripped me off. And from there, I went to the dealer, and they were even worse. And then I'm coming to you. Okie dokie. That's not a way to start off a relationship. So then you look at it and it's a $600 job. You hit them between the eyes with an $850 job. They go away, which is what you wanted to do. Now they're, all they're going to do is say you're expensive. They're not going to say, tell everybody that you're the south end of a northbound mule. They're not going to do that. They're just going to say you're expensive. So another person that shop owners don't want is somebody who wants to come in and tell you what to do to their car. Now, it's okay that you say, please perform an oil change and please perform a cooling system flush, but when you walk in and you say to us, I want you to replace the lower control arms, and we say, why? And you say, because that's what I want. We're not going to do that, because the success of this repair is dependent on you. And so what happens almost every time is we replace the lower control arm bushings because we're told to, and then the customer comes back and says, well, it's still there. And you go, what's still there? Well, it's still got a knocking noise. Well, you didn't pay us to fix a knocking noise. Yes, I did. No, you paid us to put lower control arms on it. Yeah, they were bad. Oh, boy. So now the shop has to go in and diagnose the noise in order to prove that they didn't do anything wrong with the lower control arm installation. The third customer we don't want is somebody who brings in their own parts for the same reason. Put an alternator on your car because you want us to put an alternator on your car. And then a week later, you're back in the door and say it's still happening. The car still won't start in the morning. And you have to test the alternator and find the real problem. And you test the alternator to tell them my alternator's still working, or your alternator's still working. And then you have to diagnose it to say, well, you were wrong. It's a bad negative cable on the ground at the back of the engine. So you're obligated to do work for free to prove that you didn't install the customer's parts improperly, that they misdiagnosed it. So this kind of customer comes in twice a month, and the commonality is that they've been to a lot of other shops, and they'll tell you that, and they'll tell you everybody's trying to rip them off and stuff like that. So it's only men that come in and tell us how to fix their cars, and women don't do that, unless, of course, they're told by their husband to go do that. But we just don't do that. It's just all of us gray-haired guys, I've been in this business 40 years, we know what the pitfalls are. We know what we should do and what we shouldn't do. And we know that which customers are just going to suck the life out of us. And if they don't give what they want, then they give us bad reviews, and then they do this, and they stand in front of our building with a picket sign and all this other kind of craziness. So the front counter stuff is important. It's not a big deal that the wife says, call my husband. That's not a big deal unless he starts telling us how to fix the car. Then there are people who want to argue with our checkout fees. Now, some shops have a flat checkout fee. Let's say it's $100. What they're saying quietly behind the scenes, but not to the customer, is that's an inflated number. I'm going to give you the high number, but I'm going to come in at 55, and I'm going to be a hero. So I'm going to hit you with the bigger number because it could be that. But on the other hand, I know I'm going to come in less, and I'm going to be a hero, and you're going to like me. But I got to give – some shops give you a range. Your diagnostic charge isn't going to be less than 50, isn't going to be more than 100. I'm going to find it in that period of time. There are shops out there that go 75 to 150. It's whatever your comfort zone is, but the focus behind that is most of us want to be your hero, and we want to leave some money on the table to show that we're honest, and we want to help instill trust between the customer and us. So it's not uncommon for us to come in under our estimate. And it's not on purpose. We just gave you a number, and we came in underneath the top end. So those are the kinds of things that it's important to know for a good customer. Now, we have good customers like everybody else that we'll bend over backwards for. That we're at 45,000 customers, and we got some that have two-digit, three-digit, and four-digit numbers with respect to customers. So those people walk on water. There is just nothing we're going to do to not take care of them. Even if they're a little bit unreasonable, it might sound like this. Mark, you've been a customer of mine a very long time, and I understand that you're pretty adamant that I'm the reason why your right rear tire went bad, and I missed it. So I'm going to go ahead and buy you a right rear tire. I want you to know that I'm probably not going to extend this "the tie goes to you" kind of thing on a regular basis. I'm happy to just get out of this mess with a $85 tire or a $125 tire. I'm going to do that because you're valuable to me. I don't agree with what you want us to do, but I don't want to make our relationship bad. I want you to trust us, and I'm sure you that we have no hard feelings, but I'm going to put a new tire on the right rear of your car. That's not just my shop. A lot of shops do it. But if you come in and you've been in one time and you just take 20 minutes at the front counter yelling at everybody, it ain't going to be good for you. We have a caller. Who might that be?
That would be Robert.
Robert, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mark. Dr. Mark, as I call you. Little aside here, I think the first thing we should do is castrate all the Hoyers before we let them practice. But anyway, I've got a 98 Ford Ranger 3.0 V6, about $150,000, $160,000. I was putting a new alternator on it, and on the top of the intake manifold, there are two little pipes that come out and then hook into hoses that go into the hose that goes around to the heater and that stuff. I hit one of those little pipes, apparently, because it got knocked off, and that's the only time, I'm the only guy in there. So
yep.
Is that fixable?
Yeah, it is. Most of us, that happens to us, too. So it's nice of you to raise your hand and say, this is my fupa. What we normally do is we'll take a small grinder or we'll take a hacksaw blade and we'll cut a notch in the existing piece that's still in the manifold. We'll pull that out and then we'll
rethread the whole thing. Yeah, the whole thing came out. The whole little tube came out. Apparently,
okay.
I knocked it off of there.
Okay.
Then what do you do?
If it's available, we're going to go buy one and then we're going to put it in there. We're probably going to use a little epoxy this time. And we're going to clean it up and sand it, and then we're going to press it in there. But you don't have much chance on this. You got to make sure the angle of the dangle is just perfect, because once you set it with epoxy, it ain't moving again. Now,
okay.
The other possibility is thread the hole and put in a threaded fitting. And that's something that we do a lot. But you're going to have like a 3/4-inch die or a 5/8 die, which is most people don't have in their toolbox. But
no kidding.
Some of the time, because the whole thing came out, figure out what'll fit and order a new fitting. It's a 5/8 hose with a 5/8 threaded fitting, then we're home free. So, but in your case, just call around and now they're going to ask you, there's two hoses, and I think one's one size and one's the other. One's big and one's small. So you say to them, it's the fitting, the coolant fitting at the front of the manifold on this V6, and there's two of them, and it's the smaller one of the two.
And who am I calling? I'm going to have you guys do it. Can I get it done for less than $100?
No. No.
Okay.
No, but all you do is call a couple of dealerships or call a couple of parts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Parts place. Okay.
The dealerships are going to have the thing that fell out. Now, if the thing that fell out is really good shape.
No, I've still got it.
I know.
When I knocked it off, it was still in the hose. I've still got it.
Okay.
Good in shape.
But if it's still in the business end that's going to go into the manifold, if it's still good shape, go buy some two-part epoxy, take some sandpaper, clean up the hole, take some sandpaper and clean up the fitting that's going to go in there, and then stick it in there. Tap it good. I'd maybe even use a big wood clamp to push it in there a little tighter, and then let it sit for 24 hours, and you're home free.
Okay. You got it. Thank you, Dr. Mark. That's why I call you.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, bye.
2 minutes.
Next week, we're going to have a fun show because we're going to have a doctor on the show, and we're going to argue about his job versus my job. And because we both deal with symptoms, diagnosis, repair, and then determining the success of the repair. So this has been going on since I was a little bitty boy, this discussion between doctors and auto mechanics. So I've found Will, and Will is a great guy, and Will's going to be on next week, and him and I are going to talk about the differences between him and me. And we're going to talk about who's better at their job. And we're going to talk about the pitfalls both of us have with respect to the conversation,
1 minute,
the symptom, the symptom analysis, the diagnosis, the repair, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to talk about that. It should be a lot of fun. But this has been going on ever since I was a little boy. Sometimes back in the 60s and 70s, if you told us you were a doctor on the front side when you walked in, that was a red flag. It's just because you just knew everything and you were applying it to auto repair, and we as an industry didn't like that. I was an 16 year old kid, so I didn't really care. I was out there pumping gas. But the idea was, is there's been this friendly dispute between auto mechanics and doctors for a long time. So, nevertheless, we're going to talk about it next week. Right now, we have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines. You're welcome to grab one. And, ladies, if you want to call up and tell us about a dispute, you don't have to tell us which side you're on. Just give us your side and his side, but don't tell us who's who. Just give us the dispute, and I'll chime in. I'll put my Judge Jerry hat on, or my Judge Judy a wig on, and I'll take care of you. We'll be right back. Well, it's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's 5 of them. You're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Strictly Diesel. He'll do your oil change on your car, but he really works on diesels. If you're a customer, he'll help you out, guide you on your car. And if not, you need something simple, a tire rotation, he'll take care of it. But Nate's a really great guy with the Dodge, the Ford, the Cummins, the Duramax, the Chevrolet, all those kinds of diesels. So he's really good at what he does. So if you have a diesel and nobody else can find or fix your problem, may I suggest that you give Nate a call at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And he's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and he's worth the drive. Okay, I'm going to talk to you about something that's kind of personal to me, and so I'm just going to take up some of your time. 100 years ago, somebody said something about the CASA program, Court-Appointed Special Advocate. And so it had to do with helping raise kids that were in the state's custody. And I thought that would be kind of cool. And so I applied. And the to get in is quite extensive. That includes drug tests and polygraphs and stuff like that, because they don't want people around children that may have some ulterior motive. Well, shock to shock, I passed everything. Excuse me. I ended up getting assigned a kid named Jason. And actually, I'm going to use that name, but it's not Jason. So Jason's a young kid, and I think he was about 10 when I was first assigned with him. He was in group homes, And Jason just ran away, and I just chased him all over the state. Now, he would be apprehended by police and stuff like that, and then I'd go pick him up and take him back to the group home and stuff. So it was an opportunity for me to help a young person that had that didn't have a family, and part of what I did was pick him up, take him for Jack in the Box or McDonald's, and, you know, take him over and pet the horses and all that kind of stuff. All right, so here's... You only have a short responsibility of time with these children. You can actually do it as long as you want. So I was with Jason up until the time he was 17. And he tells me now that he's older that one time he ran away because I had picked him up in a yellow Corvette and he wanted to ride in the yellow Corvette again, which is crazy, and I never thought of that. So remember, court-appointed special advocate, CASA is what the name of it is. So I'm just throwing this fish out in case you decide you've got time on your hands. You've already raised your children. You've done a good job with your kids. You have a clean background, and you want to help some young person. So Jason gets in a whole bunch of trouble at the age of 17 and a half years old. He gets sentenced to 20 years in prison because it was mandatory sentencing back then. Mandatory sentencing, 20 years. Jason just got out. He's 40 years old. And I've been with him, not because I had to be, because he was an adult shortly after he was 17 and a half, but really he had no family. So my wife and the kids and myself, we would send him for birthdays, and we kind of took care of him as he was there. So now he's out, and he's working for us, and he is just the nicest and the hardest working young man that I've really, he's in the top five of all the employees I've ever had. And yes, he's got a little bit of that prison stuff that we're working on getting rid of, like the lingo and stuff like that. But in reality, it's been one of the nicest things and one of the things that's brought me joy. Now, it's true I have three kids, and all of them are successful, and I love them with all my heart. But this was kind of special because Jason just didn't have that family structure. There's a lot of kids that are in that position right now. There's a lot of kids that are wards of the state. There's a lot of kids that are living in group homes, and they move the kids around a lot. There's lots of kids that would like somebody to pick them up and take them to McDonald's in the afternoon. There's lots of kids that would like to go with your kids to the swimming park in the summertime. So if you have time, and if you raised your kids and you were pretty successful with your kids, then and you're looking for to fill an empty hole in your life, then I would suggest that you get a hold of the CASA people, ask for an application, and go to their class and find out what it's all about. You're not going to be asked to be with the kid for 20 years like I was. That was my choice and his choice. And actually, CASA kind of stepped aside when he turned 18 years old. It was just something that I felt was in his best interest, and I had time. And I think I had the skills. So in your particular case, you would be assuming some responsibility, and part of that is standing with the kid during all the different hearings and all the different reviews and in front of different committees that were assessing the success of the program he's in and all that kind of stuff. So you're going to have some input, but you may not win every battle. But certainly the boards that look at the children that are wards of the state are going to hold your opinion in kind of high esteem, and sometimes more than the other government officials that are also involved in the child's life, because you're kind of a neutral party. So if you're missing a hole, or if you've got time, then I would suggest that you just investigate the CASA program, and I think it will bring you joy, and I think you'll feel good about it, and you'll be blessed to have that time with the child. Now, there's lots of CASAs that just had an incorrigible child. Mine was close to incorrigible, but I was close to incorrigible when I was younger, so we kind of bonded in that. And if that's the case, then you just put notice, you give them notice and just say, this isn't anything I can fix, and this is not what I signed up for, and I would like to try again, or thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. So, again, CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocate, C-A-S-A, would be where you go. We were talking earlier on the show about mistakes. I'm the king of mistakes. But the important part is learning from your mistakes. I'll tell you a couple of big mistakes that I've had. I married my wife 46 years ago. That was one of the biggest. Not true. 2 minutes. She's sitting here next to me right now. And I've turned her microphone off, so she can't really say anything. So I remember that I got on a horse in 2005, and it was like 2 hours before my radio show on another station. And he hesitated, and I said, "Let's go. We're going to go for a walk. We're going to go down, and I'm going to get a cup of coffee at the McDonald's that's about a mile away." And he shook his head, and I got off, and I checked his saddle, and I checked everything I thought, and I got back on him, and I said, "Let's go," and he said no. And so I hit him with my spurs, and he went over backwards, and I fell first, hit the back of my head, and then his head hit the front of my head. And I was, well, people that are friends of mine said that his brain has been scrambled since then, and it's okay with me because I don't care. So anyway, I spent 6 months in really bad shape. And I remembered that I shouldn't have tried to make him go. Well, come to find out, the vet comes over to check him out, and she says he has a terribly infected tooth. And she says, "I know Mark either spurred him or rattled the reins. So you shake the reins rather violently and say, 'Let's go.'" And I probably did one or the other of those. But I don't remember, because I only remember sitting in the saddle and he blew up. But it was all my fault. So I didn't think at the time it was all my fault, but I can tell you that my wife found my glasses in the tree next door. And so those are the kinds of things that you all learn from. And there's two different ways. I have family members that make mistakes but blame it on everybody else. And then there's lots of us that raise our hand and say, "It's our fault." So car repair is no different. I think I told you not too long ago that we didn't put motor oil in a truck, and the motor was wiped out, and we put a new motor in it. That's what was right, and I couldn't very well duck the responsibility of wiping out that motor because others would know the truth. We'll be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. You're welcome to join us. This is a car show, believe it or not. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We were just talking about court-appointed special advocates, a CASA. But it is a car show, so if you have a question. But if you have a question about being a CASA, you can do that as well. 602-508-0960. The CASA program is you're the advocate for the child. So there are times you're going to come up across a plan that the committee has put together, or the social worker has put together, or their whoever. And there are times you'll say, "I think this plan is a good plan with this tweak. I think this plan is a good plan, period." Or, "No, I don't think this is a good plan." So those are the kinds of things that you're involved in. You're just the advocate for the child. You represent the child and his or her best interest. So if you have any questions, Mark with a K, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Salem like the cigarette. Mark at MarkSalem.com. I can put you in touch with the people. And if this turns out to be something that it's more than you want, it's okay. It's okay. All you have to do is put them on notice that I need to move away. I need to step aside. And they'll do their best to get somebody else to step in your place. But it's kind of fulfilling. And like I said, if your kids are gone and you're an empty nester and you still feel that, you know, if you're the kind of the man or the woman that goes out into the street and plays baseball with the kids, or there's a lemonade stand and you're a lady and you stop and help the young ladies, you know, if you're that kind of person, this might be something for you. But I'm not making any money on this. I'm just telling you what has made that's kind of partially my mom and dad are responsible for who I am, but that's kind of made the good side of me. And if you know me and you think I'm really a nice guy, then don't tell anybody, because nobody will believe you. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing's been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma are the best young couple you've ever seen in your life. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They come from families that have been in car repair and gasoline sales for probably the last 50 years. So when it comes to Mesa, I only have one shop I can send you to, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street just east of Stapley. And we have a caller, and who might that be, Gil?
That would be Ned.
Ned, good morning.
How are you this morning, Mark?
You know, I'm good. I'm not in any trouble, and my wife still loves me, and she's out shopping, and I'm home by myself with the dogs. What else could be better?
That's a good Saturday then, right?
It is. It is.
You and I have talked on the phone many times, never on the radio, though.
Okay.
I called today. We were having a discussion. My father-in-law and I and some other folks about whether a three-quarter ton truck versus a one-ton truck is best for towing. And I have a three-quarter ton Dodge 2012, very, very similar to what you have. I think you have a one-ton, though. But,
yeah.
But you can get the one-tons without the dually, which makes them a little easier to park. I've never had any trouble, and it seems to me like the drivetrains are all about the same, transmissions, and, you know, you get the super high output from Dodge now anyway, and you get a little bit of an extra transmission, not for free. But the idea is, I'm thinking, and my position is, a one-ton has more stopping power than a three-quarter ton for the extra weight that it might be set up to haul. I don't know if they have heavier springs, probably a little bit. But the drive, you know, the engine and transmission, you could put it in a half ton and pull stuff. So what is the real good difference between a one ton and a three quarter ton, or is there a big difference?
No, there is. Let me go over a couple of acronyms real quick. Gross vehicle weight is the truck, the maximum it can weigh with all the beer, all the ladies, all the men, all the dogs. Okay, that's gross vehicle weight. We have another number called gross combined weight rating, GCWR. Now, let's pretend the truck is a 12,000-pound gross. Let's pretend it has a gross combined of 24,000. It is only designed to pull a 12,000-pound trailer. It has nothing to do with brakes. It has nothing to do with differential and transmission. It has to do with the load. So everything is that. I go up and down the mountain all the time, and I see three-quarter ton trucks hauling three-axle toy haulers, three-axle camping trailers. They are so far overloaded, it's not even funny. I don't even want to be around them. So if I'm going to pass them, I'm going to go fast. I don't want to be behind them. I'd want to be in front of them. So and to answer your question, they do have a little heavier brakes, and they may have a different transmission, but this is all about the gross combined weight of truck and trailer. So if you have a 35,000-pound gross combined weight, then the truck weighs 15,000 pounds, then you need you can not haul a trailer heavier than gross weight. Now, that gross weight means all the beer, all the water, all the stuff inside the trailer. That's the gross weight. So the trailer's going to have a dry weight, let's pretend, of 10,000, and it's going to have a gross weight of 11. That means you can put 1,000 pounds of stuff in the trailer, and still the trailer and the tires can hold it. So it is driven by the trailer you're pulling. I have a 4-horse trailer, and I need a 1-ton. I also have a big gooseneck trailer that I haul rock on and I haul equipment on, so I need a 1-ton, and I need six tires underneath it because I'm going to be hauling lots of weight. If I had a 3-quarter ton, any 2-axle bumper pull trailer, more than likely that is fine for a 3-quarter ton. Is yours a diesel or a gas?
Oh, mine's a diesel.
Okay, so you got like I do. You don't have the DEF fluid, the diesel exhaust fluid and stuff. So it's just a matter of those are the parameters. It really has nothing to do with anything else. It has to do with the weight, the gross combined weight of both vehicles. And I see 3-quarter ton trucks that have a gross combined weight of 30, and I've investigated collisions and accidents where it's got 40. It's been trying to pull 40,000 gross combined. So it's 10,000 pounds. Now, if you get in an accident, I'll give you an example real quick, and I know I'm against break. I'll give you an example real quick. Ma and Pa Kettle are westbound on Interstate 40. Ma's driving, and they got a big trailer behind them. They blow a tire, she crosses the median, lots of people die. Lots of people die. The problem is the truck is so under its weight capability to pull the trailer. Now, the end of the story I understand is Ma and Pa Kettle had a tremendous amount of property in Kansas. They were farmers. And Ma and Pa Kettle had tremendous income stream associated with cash rent of those acres that they rented to other farmers to rent. This virtually wiped out Ma and Pa Kettle's, everything they had worked for all their lives, to pay for all the cars and the trucks and the dead people. So, and the whole issue was surrounded by they had no business towing that big of a trailer with this truck, and as a result of their negligence, everything, they paid everything. So there is a downside to this idea that I've seen half-ton trucks, half-ton trucks zipping up and down from Payson to Phoenix with a two-axle trailer they had no business hauling in the world. No business. And when I see them, I don't even want to be around them. So that's what it's all about, Ned. Ned, I got to run, but thank you very much for calling. All the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, we have less than 20 minutes left in the show. So if you have a car request, car problem or something, you're welcome to discuss it, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you a little bit about what my life is like every day, just so that you know that I'm just not a talking head that talks about cars. Yesterday, we have a small excavator, and the battery was dead, and the squirrels had chewed up all the wiring underneath the seat. And it also had a draw on the battery, not to mention the battery was bad. So I fixed all of that. Then we have a boom lift that we cut trees with, and we also painted the barn with. And the boom lift had a propane line that went from the tank to the engine, and it was a bi-fuel, so it ran on gas and propane. And I had to wind this through the turret, which is the center portion of it that allows the boom lift to circle. So I had to figure out how to do that. And you know what I did when I took the old one off? I used a piece of mule tape and I pulled it through so I could route the new one exactly the way the old one was. And I have a John Deere lawnmower, and for whatever reason, it just starved for fuel. So I took the stupid mechanical one off that they put on this, and I put a small low-pressure carbureted electric fuel pump with a switch, and now the thing pulls big-time power all the time. So I've put three fuel pumps on this John Deere 300, and they've all been miserable failures. So I couldn't use a fuel-injected pump because they have between 30 and 50 pounds of pressure, which would have just blown up the carburetor on my lawnmower. So I had to find a carbureted-rated electric fuel pump, and I was able to do that. So those are some of the things that I do. So it's not like I sit around, eat bonbons, and watch soap operas. And let me tell you real quick about Blackwell Automotive. Tom and I are like twin brothers of different mothers. He works on hot rods. He has a business up at 40th and Greenway. I've known him for 20 years. He's kind of a principal kind of guy. I think a little bit like I am. He knows a lot about car repair and running a car repair business. So if you're in that northeast Scottsdale area, then the only shop that I can tell you that's worth its time, your time, and worth the honor of working on your car is Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. The reason I say that is there's lots of shops up there, but some of them I won't accept into my best car repair shops list because they don't have 5 years of experience, or they have really bad reviews or really bad Better Business Bureau records. Or I've had a lot of complaints about them. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway is a good place for if you live in North Scottsdale, and we have a caller.
Yes, say hello to Rocco.
Rocco, good morning.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
I got a question.
Okay.
I've been hauling horses all over the country for the last 30 years. Actually, I'm Bill Bridwell's honorary son, if you remember. We met several times.
Oh, Rocco, I remember you. And you're actually, you're helping what's the college? What's the name of it?
The Arizona Cowboy College.
Yeah, Arizona Cowboy College, where people, instead of conventions, now correct me if I'm wrong, instead of, 20 people going to the fancy hotel in Scottsdale for, a get-together, then you go to the Arizona Cowboy College in Rocco, and what's the young lady's name?
Lori Bridwell.
Lori, they'll teach you how to ride and do all the cowboy stuff, and you actually get to do the cowboy stuff just like Gunsmoke, right?
Yeah, it's pretty unique. And Lori's place has been on the Today Show, Good Morning America, CBS Sunday Morning. They say it's the only school of its kind.
Yeah.
Because we don't baby people. We make them. We teach them how to do stuff themselves. Make them sleep on the ground, and it's old fashioned. But my question was,
okay,
I'm 64 years old, and I thought I knew a lot of stuff. Tire pressure is driving me crazy, Mark.
Okay,
I got a right outside a 2000 Ford F250. Now in the door panel it says 55 pounds in the front,
yeah,
70 pounds in the back,
yeah.
Discount Tire that I do business with, they put 60 in the front and 80 in the back. They're E-rated Michelin.
Okay.
The maximum PSI is 80.
Okay.
And they said, well, this is what their computer told them to do.
Okay.
But Ford said, so what should I do? I'm confused.
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. You're going to haul horses. How many horses are you hauling?
Yeah, it all depends. If I got a one ton, it could be 6-8 horses.
Okay, okay.
And if, yeah, or if it's local, I got 2 or 4 horse trailer.
All right. My point is you're not hauling, Rocco. You're not hauling Shetland ponies. Okay, so you're hauling lots of horse meat, and if the maximum inflation on the tire is 80 pounds, I'd have 80 all the way around.
Yeah, because I was always worried that was the most you could put in, and then you drive the car, the tires heat up, and then I was worried about, I thought I'd blow them up or something.
No.
But now that you said, yes, I will do
it's,
that.
It's designed to just grow. Let me tell you something, Rocco. The other day I was hauling 4 horses up from Phoenix to Payson, and you know that it's kind of a northwesterly travel. Well, when I stopped at Ord to check the temperature of my tires, because I don't take the inflation, I take the temperature, I found
You've
out that...
You've done that all the time.
Okay, the right side tires were like 20 degrees more than the left side tires. So I thought I should switch the butt of the horses from the passenger side to the driver's side. But then I got to thinking, Rocco, where's the sun at 8 o'clock in the morning?
It's on the east side of your trailer.
Exactly. So I thought, I'm going to slow down a little bit, but that explains why one side's running hotter than the other. But when it starts hauling, we haul horses, I'm running maximum inflation on all the trailer tires. Now, we've always said cold. We've always said cold. I'm running maximum inflation on my truck and maximum inflation on all the horses. And if you've got E-rated Michelins, those Michelins are capable of 55 and 60 and north of that. But if you have an ST tire, a standard trailer tire, you've got like a 55, 65 mile an hour limit. So what you're doing, you're putting a heavy duty truck tire on your trailers, which is exactly what I do. So you're home free.
Got it.
Lori taught me everything I needed to know. So next time you have a tire question, you ask Lori, okay?
Yeah, well, and we had a guy from the college come from he retired from the Ford Motor Company after 40 years. And I always wondered why we put the horses in a slant trailer the way we do. And he said the design was to keep the heavy part of the horse away from the curb.
Away from the curb?
You want the heavier side of the horse to the middle of the road, in case you go off to the right, your weight is not hanging off the end of the trailer. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
yeah, I've never heard of that. And first of all, I don't know that anybody really plans this for a scenario that somebody's drunk and stupid and hauling 3, 4, 5, 6 horses, and then all of a sudden has the trailer start wagging. And all of a sudden they're going, oh, you should have had the butt of the horses in the middle of the trailer, and you should have done this.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. Yeah. If you get in a wreck, it's because you're stupid. So that's it.
That's right.
Okay,
Everybody
Rocco.
Everybody yells at me. Be good, Mark. It's good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Rocco. Rocco used to ride in a lot of trail rides and stuff like that. And Rocco is a really good cowboy. And Lori is slightly better than Rocco. He'll kill me for saying that. But Lori can stand with the best cowboy. She can ride with the best cowboy. She is really, and she comes from the Bridwell family, and they're all cowboys, and they've been around since John Wayne was there. Okay, we got another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Cal.
Cal, good morning.
Morning, Mark. I know all those people, and you know me. I'm Earl's friend.
Okay.
And as far as the horse hauling goes, the Ford guy, I don't know where he came up with that, but I don't understand it. You want your heavier part of your load, like if you're hauling a straight up 2 horse, you want your horse on the left hand side because the road cants to the right.
Yes.
And so that's basically the only reason for that. But the slant load was made so that horses could corner better. You could take corners at higher speeds with a straight up load where they ride front and back. You can't take a turn without throwing your horse around much faster than you can walk it.
Yeah.
And that's the way I learned. And then as far as loading and having your truck wag and your trailer wag, you always got to have the front end of your trailer heavier than the rear end, and that eliminates that problem.
You bring up some great points. I agree with number one and number two and number three. Let me just expound on number three. It applies to the guys that are hauling the two- and three-axle RV trailers as well. Cal, you and I both know, and so does Rocco, you drive anywhere in the state of Arizona, and you've got people with on a three-axle trailer that the back of the trailer is a foot, and I'm exaggerating, the back of the trailer is a foot lower than the front. So we got all that trailer weight, not on three axles, but on the back two axles. And then you've got the trailers with the nose sitting down on the ground and the ass end is up in the air. So when he goes, when he goes to apply the brakes, then it's pushing down on the back and lifting up on the front of the truck. So there is a real skill necessary to drive, to level the trailer out, to adjust the hitch, to adjust the placement of the horses, to understand how much they weigh, all that kind of stuff, so the majority of your load is sitting over the tires that are supposed to be supporting that load. So you bring up some good points.
Exactly right. The thing that I've found that really helps me, you know, with horses or livestock, you're hauling a live load, and a live load is always moving, and you know, even when they're standing still, there's enough motion. You get motion on a tire, the tire's going to heat. And I've blown enough tires to know that this is what usually what causes it. Low pressure or the angle was wrong on the tire, or, you know, we're hauling on a hot day and I'm doing 80 miles an hour with a load of horses on the first place. You know, and you blow tires. But anyway, what I found really helped me was to put nitrogen in my trailer tires.
Okay.
And I went nitrogen all the way around, and they run cooler. The sun doesn't bother the tire. You don't get the bad sun erosion.
Okay. Okay, I'm up against the end of the show. Let me comment on that real quick. How much nitrogen is in the air in the face, in your face right now?
Oh, I think it runs about 30%.
Nope, it's 60. It's north of 60.
60. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to slightly and gentlemanly disagree with you on the nitrogen issue, because I believe, yes, nitrogen is in NASCAR, but nobody, including my wife's driving 180 to 200 miles an hour. Yeah, nitrogen is in the airplanes that are landing, and there's, you know, it's how many tons of weight, how much speed and heat, all that kind of stuff. Nitrogen is a great income producer. Nitrogen and the green caps means that when you come into Salem's and you want me to check your tires because you have nitrogen, then I get a chance to sell you everything in the world. So it's called a reoccurring sales opportunity. Okay. And so I object to that. And I'll tell you something else. The tanks oftentimes are the machines that make nitrogen. They're hardly more than the 60, I think it's 68%. I could be wrong. I'm off a couple points. The bottom line is the nitrogen in my hand is often more nitrogen. The air in my hand has more nitrogen than we find in tires, because we use an oxygen sensor to check the available nitrogen in the tires. So I'm going to gentlemanly disagree, but I will agree with this. The tire is going to run slightly cooler, but I'm not quite sure that it's going to be measurable or noticeable. But I've only got 1 minute to go, and Cal, I'm not going to give him your last name, but I agree with everything that you said until you hit the nitrogen button on Mark Salem, and that's what wads up my underwear is the nitrogen. But everybody's allowed to do what they want to do, and it's okay with me. Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington. He does a good job with transmissions. Phil's been around since Jesus was a baby. He knows transmissions. He's the only shop in Phoenix that I can send you to. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. It's a great place to go if you want to ask someone questions about your transmission or to have somebody go on a test drive with you. Phil can make that happen, but try not to do it on Monday mornings or Friday afternoons for obvious reasons. If you have any questions or comments, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Good or bad, I'm a big boy. I can take them. So we'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT 960.